Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 21st on the West Coast, now April the 22nd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We would also like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and sincerely hope you get something out of tonight's show. Before we bring on tonight's guest, Dr. Christopher Holmes, Ph.D., I would like to just play something that I feel is a bit inspirational. This comes from Toto's album, the 11th one. It's called Home of the Brave.
Hold your head up high now. There's no need to cry now. We're not running anymore. Come on.
from their album, the 11th one. That was Toto. I should say that is Toto, Home of the Brave. Very, very interesting message they tucked in there with all that heavy driving music. And the fact that they chose a very spiritual key, without getting too detailed, they played the majority of that song in the key of B flat, which is highly, highly spiritual. And it represents the violet in the human aura. And that is our immediate connection with our higher self, not excluding the heart, which we're going to talk about. But here they are, an 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s rock group, which really is a combination. It's a fusion of rock, jazz, R&B, and funk, all rolled into one. These were fabulous studio musicians that got their message out to the world on many recordings, actually, with many hundreds of artists as studio musicians. And yet when they formed their own group, they focused on a purpose, and that was to deliver a message of higher consciousness, one of courage, one of, dare I say, hope, but certainty and promise that spiritual prophecies and spiritual gifts that we have in our Constitution and in our Holy Scriptures are real, and if we put them to use, they work. Ignoring them is the biggest mistake we can make. And they said, you got to remember. You have to remember. And that's what we've been talking about. We're going to talk about that in the context of tonight's guest's work. He is an author. He is a talk show host on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, every other Saturday. And he hosts his own show called Zero Point. His website is zeropoint.ca. And he's my good friend, author, and metaphysician, as well as a clinical psychologist and forensic psychologist, Christopher Holmes, PhD. Christopher, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be back.
Well, I don't know how that carried over to the telephone, if you could actually make out the lyrics.
It was a little distant. No, I couldn't. I couldn't differentiate the lyrics over the phone. I remember Toto. I remember that period of time. I think I had one of their albums.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had many hits. In fact, they were under the gun by the big record labels to produce a hit, or else they were going to be canned, and they became remarkably successful.
Uh-huh.
And one would have to say, certainly, that they were inspired from on high in many of their songs.
We see that generally quite a bit among artists. In a way,
go ahead.
It's like your heart and soul, like music embodies heart and soul. At least some of it does.
If you're listening.
I mean, I think in ways we've seen that degeneration of the music, just as other things have been socially engineered, in a way music has been as well. I think to reduce that love or inspirational aspect of music. And I think the New World Order elites prefer the chaotic and violent and music, nihilistic music.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. Christopher, I wanted to discuss something in your book, The Heart Doctrine, Mystical Views of the Origin and Nature of Human Consciousness. Specifically, some of what you brought forth regarding the teachings of Christ and his actual ministry. I find it fascinating what you have written. And if one were to just take that particular aspect of that book and actually base what you've written on that alone, one would have to conclude that you were very accurate about the others that you had written about. So, you know, that's
I try in my book to show the heart doctrine is a common teaching among within different religions and different mystical traditions, at least in the esoteric traditions. And I'm arguing in my work that modern psychology has been mistaken for the past century because we dismissed the idea of human beings as having a spirit or soul, and we assumed that human consciousness was produced by the brain and that it's centered in the head. Mm-hmm. Whereas in all the mystical teachings, they instruct us to know self within the heart, and it's through the heart that we would know or experience God. And my background is as a Christian, so I was always interested in mystical Christianity, mm-hmm. both the biblical form, but also other esoteric writings, such as the Nag Hammadi Library. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could read one quote, Don, from that chapter of one of my favorite pieces from the Nag Hammadi Library.
Sure. You want to do that right now or on an
Yeah, can I do that right now?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. It says, "You sons of interior knowledge, say then from the heart that you are the perfect day, and in you dwells the light that does not fail. They are the ones who appear in truth, since they exist in true and eternal life, and speak of the light which is perfect and filled with the seed of the Father, and which is in his heart and in the Pleroma, while his spirit rejoices in it and glorifies the one in whom it existed." So here part of the idea, it says, like, "You sons of interior knowledge, you say then from the heart." See, it's like you know this within your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, it identifies with our own heart, with the heart of the Father, or the seed of the Father. And they also describe the heart as the Pleroma. And the Pleroma is a mystical term, and it means the Pleroma is like the abundance of all possibilities, or it's like the divine plenum. So this suggests that the seed of the Father is within the heart, and it's rooted into the Pleroma. So that's just one example of the heart doctrine in mystical literature. And in my chapter on Christianity, I draw from the Bible as well as secondary Christian sources to illustrate this theme of knowing God within the heart and of experiencing Christ within the heart.
If I could comment, because mm-hmm. I think I could expound a bit on what my impressions have been, you know, having read your book, number one. When you're discussing the tenets, the basic tenets of a particular religion, without naming the religion, it seems that that's the element that you brought out, the aspect of the scriptures or the sacred texts that identify that heart-God relationship or heart-creator relationship, heart-source relationship, and it's infinite. So you're using the terminology that also describes that infinite eternal nature that is immutable. Regardless of what we do, it's there and it exists. It's available to us. And it then becomes clear where those who are studying politics or international affairs can identify the political ideologies that have been infused into too many of the religions. Do you agree with that statement I just made, or is it, you know, am I alone in my thinking?
Well, I think through the centuries, like, the primary religious teachings have been largely lost and derogated, and there's been a degeneration of religion and pitting one against the other, and religions ended up serving as a source of violence and wars and oppression. And so it's like trying to get back. We need to get back to the pure esoteric teachings at the heart of the different religions. And I think in that, the religions are more, they have that same heart doctrine teachings. And I think through the centuries, I think the New World Order elites have used religions to create conflict between people and set one group against another, and used religion for their own purposes and infiltrated the churches. And mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been this terrible degradation of the sacred messages of our religions over the past centuries.
Yeah. And so, in a sense, you are agreeing with what I said. So, thank you. But you said it so eloquently. The reason I bring that up is because we're witnessing religion being used as a political tool to separate people, you see. And when you begin the process of indoctrinating the belief system that is foundational to a particular religion, it's very easy to sneak politics in there and to create even internal dissension between a congregation that suddenly finds itself creating a new denomination of the same religion. However, they change A, B, C, D, and maybe H, I, and J in terms of the normal practices. Or within an organization, say like the Catholic Church, that divides up into diocesan compartments that are ruled slightly different depending who is the presiding bishop over that diocese. And you find sometimes conflicting ideologies, and which fundamentally in a religion that should pose a problem. One has to be true, and the other has to be false, or they both have to be false. They can't be different or opposite and both be true. Yet they can be true in their falsehood. if you get my meaning, you know. Taking a more of a Zen approach to understanding it, you know, to be fair, in other words, equitable, balanced.
I guess from my position, like religion through the past centuries has become more and more political and been perverted, and the esoteric messages of the religions has largely been lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at what we would consider our nations in the United States and Canada. I mean, traditionally we've considered it a Christian Judaic culture. But then you look at what we do, like you look at what the United States has done as a Christian nation, so-called, you know, creating wars around the world and fanning revolutions and putting up dictators and puppets, all these cruel things done by America over the past 50 years around the world. And at the same time, we kind of call ourselves a Christian nation. And none of the Christians, like, where are the Christians who love their brothers as themselves? Where are they out protesting the wars? Of course, they don't. You know, they're bought out. Instead, mm-hmm. they receive grants from the government to try to, you know, be a part of the kind of mass hypnosis and mass crowd control. It's like in the Bible, it says in the end times, it's like the churches, I think they described them as lukewarm and Christ spews them out. Like, it's like Christ isn't there in the churches anymore. And I think this has happened a lot with all of the religions, that they've degenerated and been used for political purposes.
Well, God has even been taken out of many of the churches. And these people are unknowingly or unwarily worshiping Satan because of their lack of understanding of the meaning of the words that are used during Mass or during a religious ceremony.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the word amen. I don't know if that's partly what you had in mind. I guess that the word amen is supposed to go back to ancient Greece. To ancient Egypt. Have you heard that? Amen was really derived from, Egyptian sun god worship.
Yes.
And then that was kind of incorporated not only into Christian, but I think also into Jewish religion.
Yes, Dr. Michael Castle refuses to use that term at the end of a prayer. It's to mean, so be it, at least we think it means so be it.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct. That is actually an ancient Egyptian mantra, if you will, put at the end, sort of as a seal.
I must say about using it, though, in a way, what matters is what is within someone's heart. So even if we're saying it, and even if its origin does go back to ancient Egyptian times, in a way, it's what's in our heart when we say it that's important, and yeah.
Well, yeah. Then one has to consider who uses it, and why is it being used, and why isn't it explained to us? You know, like we're examining it right now. You know, I'm reminded of some research I was doing a few weeks ago, and there was a particular name in the financial community that was coming up in conjunction with corruption that I was following. And as I connected the dots together, this name kept coming up. And so I did some research on this name, and it led me to one of these LinkedIn pages. This is a social network for corporate professionals who want to market themselves to companies who may be looking for a particular type of individual with a certain type of experience. Many times I find that these are just fronts for people involved in espionage. They're covers for them, or it's a way of communicating information to someone who's going there specifically to retrieve it for another purpose. And I found this individual had described his vocation as religious industry. He actually had the guts to put that in writing. Okay. Now, industry is that which manufactures and creates products, services, follows a particular path for economic gain. So to say religious industry, the part of being religious that requires you to spend money, to give money to another. And I think we blindly trust this because of the browbeating that's occurred for hundreds of years as to what true tithing is, or, you know, what giving from the heart is, when all the while, you know, this is really being drilled into your head with the intention of you taking your hard-earned cash and putting it in their pockets. What else? When a guy admits religious industry, what could he be talking about?
Well, I think it's an apt description of what we have now. And I mean, it's curious, you know, one of the new agey kind of movements in the churches is this prosperity consciousness, you know, and God wants you to be prosperous. And this is like the focus in a lot of churches is on gaining prosperity. I mean, it's so totally at odds with the esoteric Christian teaching. Mm-hmm. And yet this influence, I mean, it's been done systematically over decades, this derogation of the Christian churches. I mean, it seems the New World Order want this kind of one world religion, and especially Christianity seems to be the enemy of the kind of Zionist New World Order. I mean, I've been reading some Talmudic literature, and Christ isn't very highly regarded among Talmudic Jews. He's supposed to have been, he's described as the son of a whore and you know, swimming in feces and terrible things like this. But I think that the New World Order has had to, you know, through the decades, they've intentionally tried to bring about the destruction of the family and patriarchy and nationalism and traditional values, and the degradation of religion has been part of that.
Yes,
it's astonishing today that, like, where are the Christians? Like, well, there's wars all over this planet and these terrible things being done, and people in the church are just totally silent. All these spiritual teachers we have, it makes a mockery of Christianity.
Yeah, it's as though we're carrying the karma of the amphitheaters and the gladiators and the lions on our backs, in a sense, that we have forgotten those things. And I'm sure Hollywood has dramatized certain aspects to give a particular lean, but we know that there were massive amounts of Christians slaughtered throughout history. And unlike certain other ethnic groups, the Christians really don't complain about it very much, do they?
Yeah, well, we don't hear about that Holocaust. Like, I understand there were 6 to 10 million Christians killed in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, I think. And I've heard that the choice of Dresden is for bombing, it was a Christian center. And I've heard also that they chose Nagasaki and Hiroshima in Japan. There was growing Christianity in those cities before they were bombed. I don't know. Have you ever heard that, Don?
I've heard that, and to tell you the truth, even Armenia, when you talk about 22 million Armenians having been slaughtered.
Wow, I didn't realize.
You don't hear about that.
No.
You have this small group of bankers who are all part of the oil cartel, the pharmaceutical cartel, the military-industrial complex, the international corporations, these conglomerates that operate now overseas, you know, because they have for greed or purposes of greed, in other words, that they would prefer to make larger profits themselves and put us out of work here. They've exported all the jobs to countries where they're making slave wages. And all of this is overlooked. This has been a repeated story, and this country, America, has always politically and historically blamed other countries for being that way, for doing the very things that this cabal has been done. But we must remind ourselves that it's those countries that did this to their people in Europe or in Asia over many years, even thousands of years, are the ones that infiltrated this country and are doing it here. You see, these are not true Americans doing this to us. This is part of what we have to awaken to. You know, this causes the heartache.
Yeah, your country has been hijacked. I mean, it's been taken over by outside forces, I mean, the AIPAC and the Israeli lobby seems to control your senators and congressmen and president, and the same, similar in Canada. I mean, I see Canada as run by the Jewish mafia as I see it now, essentially. It's a terrible thing. I could never have conceived 10 years ago the kind of rampant criminality and cruelty of what's been done over decades. And all the time we were just fed the lies and propaganda through the TV. You know, we thought like Vietnam was to protect America, you know, and all these wars. And they were all based on lies the whole time. And it's like humankind, we have to have this mass awakening and then the remorse of conscience for what we've allowed to go on in our name. I mean, I've always felt a certain love towards America, even though I'm Canadian. It's like America was always like a big brother, and I kind of believed in America, you know. And then you wake up and you realize how atrocious it's been, how you've kind of created this global terrorist network, really, with military bases in every country in the world and kind of bringing us closer and closer to confrontation with Russia and China and all the intrigue. It's unbelievable. I could never have believed our nations were run by such psychopaths and kind of degenerate types. It's quite horrifying, really.
Mm-hmm. We could almost blame some of this on the composer Leonard Bernstein, with his West Side Story, the modern day Romeo and Juliet that took place in the burbs of New York, and I'm reminded of the song where the lyrics go, "I'd like to be in America."
Oh yeah, I love that song.
A freak in America.
In America.
So we have actually entered that, where that's the lyrics to that song are the policies of the U.S. government, and of course the Israeli lobby plays a role in that. Now, not to jump around, but with all of this as a background as to some of what's going on, in the Heart Doctrine, you wrote about mystical Christianity, which you mentioned at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to expound on some of what you wrote, if you would. I don't know if you have a copy there to refer to, but you quoted some scripture. And if you didn't know when the time of Jesus was, or if you said, well, it's right now, it's occurring right now, he's here saying this now, his words apply. Every word applies to what's going on today. And I found that remarkable, that those words were uttered close to 2,000 years ago, and they still apply.
So, yeah, it's remarkable. Yeah, it's like it's an eternal teaching. It captures eternal truth, so I guess they're timeless in that way. I very much agree. You read it, and it's as every bit pertinent today, even more so today, with our nations kind of sinking into wickedness. And there's what I do in my chapter, I draw some quotations from the Bible, like looking at the role of the heart and how the heart is discussed. Like here's a few quotes from the Bible, Matthew 5, verse 8. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." So that suggests that it's through the heart that we would know or experience God. And another verse, it's Matthew, he says, "What think ye evil in your hearts?" And that's very interesting. The Bible, it's like people's thoughts and their evil tendencies are always associated with what's in their heart. So it's seen as the main center of people rather than in their mind. Like at another verse, Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves. He said unto them, "Why reason ye these things in your hearts?" So it's as though they reason within their heart. It's not in the mind, in the head, but it's what's within the heart that marks a man or woman. Another verse is...
I wanted to ask a quick question before you go on. Could it be that the heart that they're describing, I refer to it as the head heart. It's the emotional part of the brain that's played upon through imagery and thought projection and thought leading, you know, leading statements, suggestive language, accompanied with music, you know, all the accoutrements are there to create a mood that seems like it's a heartfelt experience, when in reality, it's all occurring in the head. It's an illusion, really, because it's an evil device. If evil is in the heart, is it in connection with the Creator? Is it operating in communication with the Creator? I don't think it would be. It would possess the heart, though, like a demonic possession would.
Yeah, well, that is what is said. Like, also, goodness is in the heart, and God is known through the heart. It's said that the upper right oracle is where you have the SA node in the heart, and that's the pacemaker. That generates the life within the heart, and it's regarded as the purest chamber of the heart, whereas the left ventricle is seen as the place where evil influences accumulate in the left ventricle.
Lower.
the lower. But see, in modern science, like, scientists think that emotions are related to the limbic system, as you say. But can you imagine ever going and telling your sweetheart that you love them with all your head, or you love someone with all your limbic system? Like, in a way, people know intuitively that you love in your heart. And I'm saying that's not just a way of speaking about it, but that's actually literally true, that we do feel love and other emotions directly in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can feel loss. You feel it in the heart area. Now, modern scientists kind of think all emotions are up in the head, and I'm saying this is a fundamental mistake in modern science and psychology, that we have no modern science of the heart, and that the heart is not simply soft muscle tissue, but instead we experience within the heart space. So it's a sentient, living entity, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just an organ. It has a psychological and spiritual dimensions to it.
Yes. Well, I hope I made myself clear that when I suggested that they have created this head heart, I'm merely stating that they've drawn our attention away from the true heart, and caused us through imagery, through illusion, to accept an untruth about where those emotions actually evolve.
Oh, yeah, I didn't quite grasp. Yes, I would agree with that. And I think the same of science. Like, in modern times, I'm a psychologist, and there is no theory in psychology I've ever heard of in modern psychology where they talk about the sentience of the heart or the experience of the heart. And that would be considered, oh, that's mysticism or poetry. But people wouldn't consider that to be a sound scientific idea. And I'm saying this is a complete... I'm saying we've lost these esoteric teachings in our own Christian tradition, as people in other traditions have lost the esoteric side of their teachings.
Well, science has become a replacement for the true esoteric spiritual teachings, and has invested its time and money into attempting to disprove the reality of these higher universal truths that we're talking about. And you see this in your field or in psychiatry, where they diagnose a person who recounts a religious experience or a metaphysical experience one that is deeply real and deeply profound because they've actually experienced a spiritual awakening, and they'll be diagnosed as psychotic or schizophrenic or pathological, anything to demean the character of the individual, not at all discussing the event that the person brings to the table, but merely trying to assassinate the character of the messenger.
Yes, science has definitely attempted to do that, undermine religious belief. And we see a whole spat of books recently, like God is a Delusion. And there was a whole series of books trying to debunk the God hypothesis, essentially. And I think, I would say in large part, in this is quack science, that it's people who assume a materialistic perspective, and they arm themselves or pretend that they're scientists dismissing the irrational and religion, but really they do it on a quack basis. Mm-hmm. But it's just like there's been an attempt in modern psychology for the past century to deny all the psychical phenomena experienced by people, like ghosts, poltergeists, out-of-body experiences, PKs, psychokinesis, psychical impressions, all of these things. And they've formed this committee for the scientific investigation of the claims of the paranormal, who are called the Psy-Cops, because they're kind of cops trying to stamp out people's belief in psi phenomena. But no matter how hard they try to stamp it out, still 70% or more of the population believe in God, or that we have spirits or soul, or there's life after death. It's something intrinsic to most human beings that they intuitively feel these things. Mm-hmm. And so the scientists have never really been able to stamp it out and replace it with their kind of dogmatic reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that through the centuries, these people who say they're arguing on the basis of science, it's not really been on the basis of science. It's been on the basis of quack philosophy, because they, for instance, they dismiss all the evidences for all the paranormal phenomena, all of which suggests the possibility of human beings having a spirit and soul nature. And there's massive evidences for that.
Yes.
All kinds of studies. So these people who dismiss religion and they say it's on the basis of science, I would say that's fraudulent, because really what I run the Zero Point Institute for Mystical and Spiritual Science, because I'm saying that we need to look at mystical and spiritual ideas from a scientific perspective and evaluate them scientifically, that they're not just belief systems, but I'm saying that I think they contain truths that we haven't yet been able to grasp mentally.
Well, I think because those have been obfuscated, or we have been indoctrinated not to look in those directions, not to seek that information out independently or in groups. It's frowned upon because it's liberating. It frees us. And Christ said that many times in what he taught. Would you define? There's so much more I could say on this, but I don't want to drift too far off the topic. Thank you for addressing that. You were going to quote something else before I cut in on you.
I guess I had another quote just from the Bible, perhaps. I'm not sure if that's what I was going to quote. There were different ones I had in my book. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. That's from Luke. And Mark says, the sower soweth the word, and these are they by the wayside where the word is sown. But when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts. So here it's like the word of God is said to have been sown in the human heart. In my chapter there, I have a book picture from Jacob Bohme, an early Christian mystic, and it shows a picture of the spiritual heart, and it shows a picture of the four-letter name of the Tetragrammaton written, inscribed within the heart. And that's another Christian teaching, is that the Word of God is sown within our hearts. So I'm saying that this is kind of an aspect of Christian teaching which really has scientific merit, but which has always been considered, oh, it's just religion, meaning that it then doesn't have any scientific validity or objective validity. And I'm saying we've misunderstood this about religious teachings. I think mystical teachings in ways are more advanced than modern science.
Mm-hmm. What do you think makes these teachings mystical? To me, mystical is, in a sense, that which we're not familiar with, or that which we haven't become aware of, and or that we can't explain in our language. We can't attribute to another without them experiencing the same thing that we're trying to communicate, because of the amount of information that has been withheld or discouraged from being cultivated within us, if you get my meaning. In other words, those that profess to be leading us down this path of righteousness are leading us down a dead-end street. And we see it in the shortcomings of the religious leaders. We see it in the corruption that occurs in some of the larger megachurches. The very fact that these organizations are encouraged to become overgrown, in a sense, unmanageable, shows that there isn't that intimate contact that you would get by knowing all the people in the congregation. How can you begin to know 10,000 people sitting in an arena every Sunday morning, mesmerized by oftentimes a politicized version of Christianity? Certainly, that doesn't even approach what you're calling mystical Christianity, does it?
No, it doesn't. I guess when I think, use the word mysticism, and partly I think mysticism approaches the mysteries. And what are the mysteries? I think the mysteries are the question of the existence of the human spirit or soul, and the origins of consciousness, possibilities for life after death, the nature of the multidimensional universe. So these are, I would say, the mysteries, like the mysteries of life, have to do with this origin of this living consciousness within us. What produces that, which mm-hmm. is the main unsolved enigma or mystery in modern science. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that when I use the word mysticism, I'm not using it in the pejorative way that most scientists would use it. When they say something, oh, that's mystical, then they mean, oh, that's the opposite of science. Whereas in my view, mystical teachings are this form of ultimate science, kind of beyond what we can yet grasp. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember years ago reading a section of Swami Prabhupada, and he was saying, oh, you earthlings, you think you're so smart and you can spend billions of dollars and you blast off in a rocket and you can get a little capsule to land on the moon. And he says, you know, you think this is a great technological advance. But then he says, well, yogis can use advanced psychical powers and can travel to planets in the material sky as well as planets in the spiritual sky. And I realized, like 30, 40 years ago, I didn't know if that was really possible, but I realized I didn't know it wasn't possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly what my point is, but I believe that we as human beings have these supernormal faculties, and different points in my life I've had different mystical and spiritual experiences, which has convinced me of the reality of these phenomena and experiences. And that's why I've studied them for the last 40 years, trying to understand them more deeply and looking at them on a scientific basis.
Yes. Now, your comment actually segues perfectly into what was going to be my next question. So, you know, we're on that same wavelength here. What would you say to the individual who in his or her mind and heart and understands this heart connection that you're talking about? They've achieved that to some extent, that they're inspired from time to time, maybe not always. Maybe it's because they're not focusing on it, or maybe it's just that they pick up these inspirations when they're most pertinent in their life at any given time. What would you say to the person that's aware of that heart connection as to what they can do with that, how they can develop that, how they can make it more meaningful, not just in their lives, but to influence others?
I guess there are different practices that help enhance that heart consciousness. Like from my studies in the Gurdjieff teaching, like through my life, I've struggled with negative emotions. Like Gurdjieff particularly emphasizes, we want to get rid of negative emotions, hatreds, angers, jealousies, all these different negative emotions. So we want to kind of purify the heart, firstly getting rid of negative emotions. And you know, as I go about my life, sometimes I tap myself over my heart and try to bring my awareness to feeling in that part of my body, because the heart consciousness, most people's consciousness is centered more up in the mind, in the head. See, yes. Consciousness can be centered different places in the person. I'm not saying that we only feel consciousness in the heart. I'm saying it originates out of the heart.
Yes.
Like mystics say, the self within the heart is self-illuminating like the sun. And that light of the self within the heart is said to be consciousness. So if you awaken in the heart, the light of consciousness can then illuminate the faculties of the mind. So consciousness, I would say, is like light. And we have to, early Christians talked about light gaining. Like we need to learn to live in the light. And that is the light of the self. Whereas the Bible says most people live in outer darkness.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember reading specifically about this, at least to this evening or this morning, depending where you are, this afternoon, wherever you are in the world. But Gurdjieff, if he encouraged us to get rid of these negative emotions, and I do recall reading that, was he implying that those negative emotions actually were the root cause of reinforcing the false self, the ego?
Yes, so they're based on false ego in the first place.
Okay.
They're created by this false ego, false sense of self. They're based upon, they're not objective emotions. Instead, they've been acquired or conditioned through our socialization and education and such. So they're artificial emotions, in a sense. So we want to rid ourselves of these to try to get back to our more primary emotional, pure emotional state.
Mm-hmm. Now, some could argue that there's a bit of analysis in that. And, of course, he's making distinctions between what is positive and what is negative. So he is analyzing, but it's up to the individual to make the choice to change or to maybe not change so much as just become aware. The change will occur on its own accord.
That's quite as what Gurdjieff says. He says, if you become conscious of these negative emotions, simply becoming more conscious of them as they can occur can take the energy out of them or undermine those negative emotions. He says they don't have a real center in us. He says they're centered in what he calls a formatory apparatus, which is our conditioned patterns of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's like we have all, Gurdjieff says, every time we have a negative emotion, we're always wasting emotional energies. So trying for a person to accumulate emotional energy is like trying to fill a sieve, because all the time they're wasting their negative emotions. You know, your baseball team loses, or you get splashed by a car, or something gets broken. Little negative emotions people have all the time about little things that really have no value or meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But Gurdjieff says we just have to start becoming aware of these negative emotions and observing them within ourselves as they occur. And it's on that basis that it takes the energy out of them, simply observing them. He says certain things can't go on in the light of consciousness. So it's like if you wake up, you look at yourself and it's like, my God, how could I have been so asleep? How could I have done those things? Because we do these things in a state of unconsciousness without really realizing what we're doing. So then we wake up, and in a way, you need to be horrified at yourself. Gurdjieff places a very important emphasis on the awakening of conscience in the person as the means to transforming of the heart.
Yes.
That we
now,
need
so
to
I thought you had finished. I apologize.
No, I was.
The admonition to do this by Gurdjieff goes hand in hand with what Christ taught, but Christ taught merely by speaking the truth. And he used, often he used metaphors or parables, as they're described, which was presented to us as if it was encoded language. But I see the simplicity in what he says, in just looking at the statements that he made as truisms that were immutable. Now, what history has experienced is the undoing of those teachings and the assailment of those teachings. But the truth still remains the truth, even though we have been indoctrinated to accept other things, other possibilities, under the guise of opening our minds as if somehow we are going to become greater beings for following this insanity, you know, this propaganda and this indoctrination, this mental conditioning or mind control. Jesus flat out made truthful statements talking about the nature of faith. You wrote about that. You brought up the issue of the mustard seed in describing. Could you put that into your own words?
Well, in my writing on it, in part in my chapter on Christianity, I'm looking also to see if I can find the zero point teaching in there. And by that, what I argue in my work is that, like, we have a zero point center. It's like there is an I, or a divine spark, or a spiritual spark.
Mm-hmm.
So, I quote from John Francis's book about mystical Christianity, and he takes the parable of the mustard seed, which is like the smallest seed which grows into the largest tree. And I'm saying that that is similar to the heart, that in a way within the heart is this divine spark, and from that, like, that grows into this consciousness that pervades all of us, and it all originates from a point source. So that, in part, is what I'm suggesting, is that the zero point teaching is also within the Bible, in the mustard seed parable, And there's another parable in the Bible. I'm trying to recall what it is. Goodness, I forget.
I'm not in a mind-reading mode tonight. So.
No. but that's part of the idea of the mustard seed, is that we, like in Blavatsky says, the suns expand and contract through their own selves and hearts. So I'm saying that within a person's heart, you have a divine source emanation. And then that is stepped down, you have a spiritual spark or a spiritual self. And then you have a psychical heart and a physical heart. See, I would say the heart is really a higher dimensional structure, that there's a higher dimensional holographic physics to the human heart. That's what I explain in my books in more detail. But the idea is that there's that first point, just like our universe had a first point singularity, where the whole universe emerged from a first point out of the quantum vacuum. Well, I'm saying a human being has such a first point, and that is this divine spark.
That's no different than the creation, then. In other words, the creation began from, it wouldn't have to be a big bang, so much as just a gradual expansion, an intentional expansion. And we are at some point in that process. But as the universe expands and as our reality expands, I think they've discovered that separating us from each other, separating us from the Creator, is the road to controlling us totally. Which is,
yes,
that's the,
yeah, I really think they've done that, and they've done that through the terrible influence television and the media has on people, the horrendous kind of impressions and violence that they cultivate, and through the educational system. Like, I think this has been done intentionally. They want robots to serve their new world order. But I think these people, the elites themselves, are really, they in themselves lack that heart center. In a way, they are soulless. In a way, they sell out. They sell their hearts, you know, for money, sex, and power, and they lose heart. They don't. Gurdjieff describes husnamuses, which in his language is most similar to a psychopath. And he says of them that they lack the divine impulse of objective conscience. And I think that's what you see with the elites. They lack that capacity for objective conscience. Like, I can't imagine spraying people from the air with poisons, with knowing that this is going to give people mental, like, degenerative disorders and cause health problems, but they can make money at the other end by selling medications. And these people would actually do that type of thing just for money and for profit and control of people and to reduce the world's population. See, there's something lacking in them. They have no heart. They have no feeling or compassion for other people. Their deficit, like they emotionally, I think the elites are like 5 and 6 year old children. They're so self-centered and selfish. They've been pampered to all their life. They've never been held accountable. They think they're a breed apart. So they grow up, they lack that essential soul feeling within their hearts. And then they don't like to see other people experiencing love or these experiential states because they don't themselves.
Mm-hmm. And they spend the entirety of their reality on this planet devising means of obtaining more power and exhibiting all the associated disorders that go with that, those type of complexes.
I don't. And mean it's really quite foolish, like in the sense, like what? what good does power do you at the moment of death? Like, you can't carry it with you into the beyond, and you can't take material possessions with you. What's most important in life, in my view, is that we attain our soul, that we learn to live spiritually and awaken this spiritual awareness within us. And that's kind of the purpose of life. And, you know, it's hard to imagine then that someone, the unspeakable greed of these people, like even of the churches, you look at the Catholic Church and how wealthy they are, and there's people starving all around the globe. Did the Catholic Church ever really help people significantly? No. You know, the Catholic Church, they divest in the armamentation industries. You know, they invest in weapons. You know, it's such a fundamental distortion of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And
they invest in informational or disinformational websites on the internet as well.
Yeah.
That's just a small fraction of what goes on there. But we can't put all the blame on them. They've been a major player for a long time, and what you're seeing across the board in organized religion are all kinds of offshoot groups that merely divide and then conquer. It's it's apparent what's going on. You can't get the Christians to agree on a fundamental theology, or I don't want to use the word doctrine, but it should be based upon universal truths.
Yeah.
And they should be found or be evidenced in the creation and the natural universal processes that make up what we call life in the universe.
It's interesting. I think common people are much closer to these things than our church leaders or politicians or others. Like, even though, like, there's this terrible kind of perversion in the Catholic Church, but at the same time, there are many Catholics who are, like, really good people and quite take to heart Christian teaching. So Catholicism, although there's that corruption in the church, that doesn't disqualify. There are a lot of, like, sincere Catholics, as there are Anglicans or other denominations. So I think Christianity and other religions have had a favorable impact despite the corruption of the churches.
What do you think happens, Christopher, on a metaphysical level to any religion or any religious organization that allows the fundamental precepts which are taught to the people under the guise of being the Word of God, who bend to the political or economic will that's presented to them? In other words, am I making myself clear to this point? Or,
well, I think that's what's happened a lot in the church, and that our holy men aren't holy. They're motivated by the same greed and corruption and desire for status, all these human lower needs, and that's become inculcated in most of the men of the different the churches and religious groups. It's a pervasive problem. I think we've lost the esoteric side of the religious teachings.
Yeah, so then, in essence, they're not really being these religious, whether you want to call them beliefs or doctrines or even dogma, are being put into the head rather than encouraging the unfoldment of the heart.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah. But you look at what's been done historically by the Christian church. I mean, they they murdered, you know, one third of all Muslim men in Israel, in the Holy Land, and they, you know, had the Crusades and all these wars carried out in the name of Christ, and murdering how many witches and women did they murder through the Inquisition? You know, I think 500,000, 600,000, like. I mean, the history of the churches has been a history of cruelty, domination, perversion. It embodies nothing of what was Christ's pure teaching.
Yes, and that's been the case in other religions as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, look at the Shias and Sunnis. I mean, here, the two sects of the same religion, and they have this historic hatred of each other. I mean, that's also, I think, been fueled by certain Zionist factions, because they can go put a bomb in a Shia mosque and blow it up and blame it on the Sunnis, and then they can put a bomb in the Sunni mosque and blame it on the Shias, and the Shias and the Sunnis fight it out, and meanwhile the Zionists kind of laugh at it all. Mm-hmm. You know, by way of deception, we wage war. You know, they use religious animosities and stoke it like fires to encourage other people to, you know, engage in war and population control and such. And so I think religious animosities have been intentionally fostered by the Illuminati through the decades and centuries.
See, and you have to ask yourself the question, and what's going through my mind is, you have a pope right now who's alleged to have sold Klystron B gas during World War II.
Yeah.
How does one achieve such a lofty seat in a place like the Vatican with that kind of background? I mean, what really is this that we're talking about here?
And I think the Catholic Church was also hijacked, and I think you can go back in history and you can see some popes who I think had a bit more integrity, but then I think the Zionists infiltrated the Catholic Church. I believe the current church is, the pope is Jewish, and I think they have been for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, that same pope is the one who, you know, obstructed justice in terms of bringing all these pedophile priests to justice. And why did he do that? Because it might affect the wealth of the church, because there could be all these lawsuits. And I remember hearing someone in the States saying they were trying to sue the Catholic Church, and they said it was as hard as suing the mafia. It was almost like suing the mafia. And I think that's so. I mean, I believe that they conduct satanic ceremonies under, you know, in the Vatican, in Rome. And I've heard reports of this, and them carrying out satanic Luciferian services, and I believe that's true. Mm-hmm. You know, at the highest levels, our churches have become thoroughly corrupted.
Yeah, they. I've heard numerous accounts of some of their sleeper agents who are shocked during their childhood into witnessing sacrificial murders of other children.
Yeah.
So I think you're referring
to trauma-based conditioning.
Yes.
It is common, yeah.
This is not just a rumor, these things. I mean, from the perspective of someone like yourself who has studied the world religions in the depth that you have, you've come across this story more than once, have you not?
Well, I mean, I've come across that more through internet radio shows and, as all this MKUltra and trauma-based conditioning, as people have become more aware of this, and we've realized how extensive this has been. Like, how many mind control slaves do these people have throughout America? You know, it could be in hundreds of thousands or more. So it's a lot more widespread than we could ever have imagined.
Well, I can guarantee you that you have them in Canada, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, around the world. It's nothing unique to America.
Yeah. I don't mean to single out Canada. just reminding you, if anyone's under the delusion that it only occurs here in America, look again.
Oh, yeah. No, I certainly wouldn't believe that. No, I mean, I feel I've lost my country of Canada, too. Like, I had no idea how corrupted it was. And then to wake up, and it's been shock to me. I only woke up like 5-6 years ago. Until then, I'd believed the TV and the media. I had no idea the extent of the corruption, and especially in Canada, because Canada, you know, we don't have military forces up here, and most Canadians have always thought of ourselves as peacekeepers in the world, and then here we are now engaged in these criminal wars, all based on lies, like in Afghanistan, and now we're supposed to have some role in Libya. You know, these are criminal wars for these elites. You know, I the way I feel, all our senior military people need to be tried for treason. They're taking our soldiers over there under false pretenses, knowing that the Canadian public has been deceived about it. You know, it's hard to believe the corruption, the extent of the corruption within our societies, among our political and religious leaders. I could never have imagined it. Even after myself being a forensic psychologist, worked in prisons for like almost 15 years, at least the guys in prison had more heart and soul than these elites do. Most guys in prison, at least I worked in the provincial system, so it was 2 years less a day. It wasn't as serious offenders in the provincial system. But most people in there, they come from disadvantaged backgrounds, and they have drug, alcohol problems and anger management problems and things like this. But at least you can understand them in hearing their life. You can understand why they had done the things they did and why they have the problems they have. But these elites, I mean, they're the real criminals in the world today. They're the real psychopaths. And they're, in a way, they're of a totally different breed than who you would ordinarily find in the prisons. You know, mm-hmm. They say you steal $1 trillion, you don't go to prison. You know, if you steal a loaf of bread, you get 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, and there are so many cases of that. Christ talked about this group of people. He identified them, and he referred to them as ye generation of vipers.
Oh, yeah.
What was he saying? Now, we know what a viper is. It's a poisonous snake, but it's an animal that will consume you after injecting its fangs into your bloodstream. So there's a lot of symbology in what he said, but what do you feel he was saying, that he would identify them as vipers?
Well, I mean, I guess we've always associated snakes with the devil, Satan, even going back to the Garden of Eden, where it's the snake is a servant of the Satan and tempts Eve. And, you know, I don't know if it's also a further reference to our reptilian elite, because mm-hmm. I think that's quite possible, that there's a reptilian, that they in a way have separate bloodlines, that they've tried to maintain their bloodlines, and mm-hmm. and they might go back to genetic experimentation or reptilian race. I think that's very possible. Christ also talks about the money changers. He throws the money changers out of the church, and I think we got the same money changers today, who destroying our planet.
Yes. So when he said generation of vipers, he's identifying them as a whole group born of the same seed, in other words, or from the
yeah,
same seed.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I agree.
Or a group. And he's actually, is there such a word as demonification? Or demonify? Well, he's portraying them as demons in a sense, without using the word. distinctly different.
Yeah, I see these people as being demons. Like, I think these people are possessed by higher dimensional beings that act through hyperspace and can possess people's hearts. That they actually, there's an actual physics to it, I believe, that people can be possessed through their hearts. In a way, you can sell your soul to the devil.
Mm-hmm.
For worldly goods and worldly power, and that people actually do that. And they like to think that there's no life after death, and they themselves don't have the heart feeling, so they kind of don't believe that God exists anyway. So they have an existential philosophy that, you know, whatever, you know, pleasures them or gives them momentary pleasures, what they should pursue. They don't have that deeper moral feeling that I think most people have just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gurdjieff sees that the impulse of conscience as natural to human beings. That when you know, he says that's how to define good or bad. He says something is bad if when you do it, you in a way you know in your conscience that you shouldn't have done it. That's how you define what's good or bad is mm-hmm. is through the presence of conscience. And these people seem to have no conscience. Most people couldn't imagine. That's why so many people can't believe, like, why would anyone spray us? Doesn't our government love us? You know, don't our doctors care for us? Like, they can't believe such a betrayal.
Or, yeah, or wouldn't the government arrest those doing that to us?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's what's so awful about waking up in a bit. It's like they control the police, they control the politicians, they control the churchmen, they control the intelligence agencies. It's such a pervasive and insidious control. It's, in the Bible, I think they say Satan has a hierarchy of servants, and that's kind of like what it is. It's all these people through these secret societies and organizations and this hierarchy of servants.
Yes.
Bringing about this Luciferian agenda. But it's so beyond most normal people who I think are much simpler and have more feeling in their hearts.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're almost out of time. I did want to bring up something. You wrote to me in an email mentioning, this was in you gave me a copy of your book. You put an insert in the book, kind of a short note, and you mentioned September Clues.
Oh, yeah.
I've had communication with Simon Schack and invited him to the show.
Oh, you did? Oh, excellent.
Yes. And his response, though it wasn't in the affirmative, mm-hmm. was not a dead issue. What he was hoping to see, and he made a very poignant statement about his work. For those listeners out there who are not familiar with this body of documentary work that Simon Schack produced. You know, he's in Rome, Italy, by the way.
Yeah.
He feels very strongly that his research speaks for itself and that if anyone will study it, certainly with an open mind, but even an open heart, you cannot help but see the truth and the discernment of what really happened on 9/11. And if he saw a groundswell in the consciousness of Americans, for instance, and people all over the world, and not letting that issue die, which they would love for us to do.
Yeah.
But to keep it foremost in people's consciousness and even lead them to the truth that we know and that many do know, but feel powerless to do anything about. Simon says he would come on the show if he saw that. And I think not only would he be a tremendous guest, but he can give an outsider's point of view of what he observed and where his research led him. And I find in many ways things he discovered crossed paths with or intersected collided, is maybe even a better word, with my own research in that regard, or the research of others that I'm aware of that have developed the same conclusions. And it was about making money. It was about stealing money and creating a number of false scenarios that could be documented on film and cashed in on secret insurance policies and just the most unimaginable corrupt activities emanating out of the SEC using the stock markets and flipping companies and making people disappear. We'll put that in quotes. And I'm going to do something with those videos. With his permission, I may just post them on my site and get other people to do the same thing as well.
I'd like to, if any of your listeners are interested, I've written almost a 40 to 50 page article based on an analysis of his video series, September Clues. And I actually sent it to Simon and received a letter back from him. And he had like outstanding praise for my commentary on his movie and explanation of it. And he was saying how much he appreciated it. And he had hoped that there would be more commentary like what I offered. And I have his sites up on my website. And the article on my website is called Fabled Airplanes. I know I saw the September Clues series about 4 years ago, and I thought it was so important. And at one point, I mailed copies of the series out to you and Dr. K and Rick Adams and different truth researchers, trying to promote people to look seriously at it because of the no plane issue. Which I think that video series convinced me that there were no planes on 9/11. But when I analyzed the video series, it also led me to the conclusion that the whole day's events had been staged. All the witnesses were staged, in my view. And you could see it. I break it down. I look at the transcripts of some of these witnesses, and there's such ridiculous absurdities in their things they say. It just doesn't make sense at all. So I think the whole thing was scripted. And I argue that in my article. It's called Fabled Airplanes, up on my site, and it has Simon's comments on it. Yes. And when I was speaking to him, he was then saying that he's moved on now looking at the issue of how many people were actually killed on that day. And he's done photo analysis of that. I think I sent you the link to that. I thought you'd be very interested in that because of your background in kind of photo analysis and such. Have you seen that on his website, Don?
I saw it, but I saw it posted there, but I haven't had the opportunity to actually delve into it like you suggest. but I will say this: I've done a number of shows back in 2008, 2009 about his videos. I had watched them, and then more recently he added a 10th part to that.
So after the epilogue? I think the epilogue was part 8, actually. It went A to G and then the epilogue.
Yeah, there are like 10 parts to this now.
Oh, yeah.
So I more recently got to view those, but he didn't change anything in the first 8 parts. Mm-hmm. And you know, the 10th part is a short wrap-up. But what is interesting is that many of the things he points out, we brought out on real-time radio with CNN running on a TV in the background and my writing down names and all of that and doing the research on who some of these alleged witnesses were. And it was quite obvious that these were all intelligence agents who had been sent there just to line up and, you know, make these statements like, well, this plane crashed into the building and all the fuel leaked out and caught on fire and the steel columns couldn't stand the heat of the fire and the whole building collapsed, you know.
Yeah, like that witness on the street who said, oh, the building fell due to structural damage.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, oh, a perfectly clear explanation. Oh, perfect. You know, and this was like 1 minute after the towers fell down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. You look at the witnesses, it all falls apart. It was all staged. It was a Hollywood production from beginning to end. You know,
yes.
That's my view. And the airplanes were just concocted in the studios. I mean, you look at the pictures of the airplane. I haven't seen one that I think is authentic. And then you see all the video forgery, and then you realize, well, if there had been a real plane, there would have been no need for all this forgery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like all the different shots of the airplane, they also kind of disqualify each other. The angles of the airplanes, the colors, the more one looks into it, all the evidence just slips away, and I believe it shows the complicity of the media, the corporate media, in staging 9/11. I don't believe the media report the news. I think they help stage it, and they're scripted ahead of time. I believe for most major news events, they're scripted.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but anyway, we should come back. And well, it was nice to talk a little bit about mystical Christianity. It's Good Friday today, so I guess a long time ago, Christ was sacrificed his life today for human beings to try to awaken and to realize God. And I hope in we need a revival of spirituality and among humankind, because we're certainly up against a formidable satanic enemy. We live mm-hmm. in such troubled times, and I just see the destruction of the earth. I just watched a video of this evening, Lorraine Moray. Are you familiar with her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her talk about the Japanese disaster and about the nuclear industry. It's like we're really under attack. People, we need to realize this. You know, our lives and our children and grandchildren are at risk. You know, we need to face this terrible trial in the history of civilization. I don't think never before in the history of humankind have we had the weaponry to destroy the earth. But whereas now we do, and you know, we just have to turn this course of events around.
Yeah. Well,
thanks, Don.
I appreciate you being on the show, and maybe the next time we can talk about September clues.
Oh, that would be fun. Yeah.
Gets you
yeah,
on.
If you could get Simon on too, I had some email with him before. If I can get him on my show, I'd love to do a 2-hour show with he and yourself too. So that might be another format. But if you can get him, that would be excellent.
Well, we'll pray that one or both of us can do that. How's that? And then
we can bring
out some truth.
Yeah.
He's basically looking to see that people are going to stand up and show some resolve in this. And it's something that should not be forgotten, but in terms of what happened, but let's really look carefully at who caused it to happen and what their motives were.
Yeah.
It's no different from any of the other false flag events that we've had occur around the world. And we need to use discernment in terms of what's happening in Japan and elsewhere regarding earthquakes and tsunamis and nuclear meltdowns.
Mm-hmm.
The official sources are putting out contradictory stories about what's going on. The data mm-hmm. is conflicting as well. And that's definitely a sign of disinformation at its best. We can find the answers from within ourselves. And that's what this show was about. And I hope you agree, Christopher, before I say goodnight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. Thanks, Don, and thanks, BBS. And we'll talk to you again.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guest, Christopher Holmes, Ph.D. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints, either live or in an archive. Also, I want to thank Seth Hendrick at BBS Radio on the sound tonight. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.